Hi, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Editor. I have fabulous guests, not one, but two, with a full-length film. The film is called Death Among the Pines. I have director Nathan Sherpa.
Shepka, yeah. All right, guys, how's it going?
Shepka. And I know I can't say this guy's name. It's Tom Jolie, maybe?
Jolliffe.
Jolliffe. Ah, close
That's
enough.
one of the best attempts I've had, though. So, yeah,
I do
cheers for that.
always try. I think it's my game just to screw up people's names, but I really
Yeah.
do try. How are you guys doing, by the way? Welcome.
Good, not bad. How
Yeah,
are you?
good.
I'm good. I have a little bit of a sore throat today, so I apologize if I'm coughing. It's not what I'm trying to do it on purpose. So let's start at the beginning. Nate, Tom, sorry. You have an idea. You write a script, obviously. What do you do with it next? Do you find Nathan? Do you shop it around? How does that work?
So this one, Nathan and I have worked together a few times now. I think probably our third feature this was. So we were kind of spitballing the idea of maybe doing another feature film after our previous one, which was The Baby in the Basket, kind of gothic horror film. So we kind of wanted to do another one and keep the momentum going. We're trying to think of sort of like a chamber piece we could do, quite Hitchcockian and quite contained. So that's how the idea was kind of born.
So Nathan, when you're shooting something like this, and it is contained film, do you think about that all the time? Saying, I mean, we'll get to location stuff. I do want to get into that. Just what your basic premise before you've even started shooting. Does shots run through your head, or do you need a location first, or how does that work for you?
A little bit of both, yeah. I mean, this was an idea that I had a few years ago. That happened to mention to Tom. It's a very sort of brief log line that I thought would make an interesting film. But generally, some if you've got a kind of creative mind, you tend to see shots even if you're reading through the script or coming up with the idea. But sometimes the location can either aid what you've got in your mind or cause you to have to rethink it based on any sort of restrictions that that particular location has. So, crane shots or dolly shots that you might have thought of, you find nine people crammed into a corridor in a cottage suddenly becomes impossible. But it's like anything else, you kind of try and adapt.
So, Tom, do you write for that in mind since you guys have worked on a few films together now? Do you write? Well, I know what Nathan's going to do because I've seen him. But I mean, he's going to surprise you, obviously, too. But how do you write your scenes? Or you say, nope, this is just what I'm going to write. He can figure it out. He's a director.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I sort of we've got quite similar tastes in films anyway, and by the time we're running through the idea before I kind of launch into the script, we're kind of knowing which direction it's going to go in. I'm quite used to with other people that I write scripts for, writing to specific budgets and locations, and I kind of know the limitations of how things are shot. What you can do in certain locations and confined spaces. So I kind of go with that in mind and try and make it reasonably easy for Nathan. But we're kind of like on the same wavelength. So when I'm writing, I kind of know, if I'm writing something quite complex in terms of, that's going to be really difficult to block out, then I'll do something, fairly simple. But again, trying to keep it more interesting than just two people sat on a sofa, like one side and the other person's on the other. So we try and keep it quite engaging in terms of how it's going to look on screen and how it's going to be blocked.
Okay, let's start the opening shot of the scene in the forest. How long did it take you to prep that, and was it uncomfortable for a certain person?
Yeah, I mean, I think that any location in Scotland at night in autumn or winter is always going to come with a certain amount of discomfort. But yeah, I mean, we shot in a forest, probably about a 40, 50-minute drive from where I stay in central Scotland. But the weather, even though you can't really see it quite as much because of the canopy of the trees, the weather was disastrous one of the nights. I think we shot over two nights for that stuff in the
Oh.
forest. But it got to the point where we'd put up one of these sort of like gazebo type things just to keep people out the rain, and the whole roof had collapsed in like that just with the weight of the water. And then the van got stuck, so all of that kind of stuff you're susceptible to on set, unfortunately.
So Tom didn't write that in the script, the van getting set and the thing called. You should have added that to the next one for us. You're prepared.
Yeah, I just write these things knowing that that I'm not going to be on set. So, I find that with a lot of films that I've done, especially exteriors at night. I watch the film and I think, yeah, I'm probably glad that I wasn't there, but also feel a bit sorry for the people that I've subjected that to.
So, how long did a certain actor have to be under something during this scene?
I guess you're saying that for the sake of spoilers, but it was
Well,
under
of
there
course
called
I can't say what's going on. I have to be careful.
Yeah, no, I mean it was under there for probably like half an hour or so. I mean,
Well, that's
don't
not
get me
bad.
wrong, it wasn't, 6 foot deep or anything like that,
Okay. I want to go to the house, and then you know what? Let's go beginning of the house with you have a basket full of food the young lady brings in. That stuff looks fresh.
Yeah, it was fresh. Yep, bought that morning. Yeah.
Okay, so where did that stuff come from? Is you bring it in, or is it a nearby village, or?
Oh no. Well, in the story, she's been to a nearby
I
village.
know in the story where she brings it from. I'm
Yeah.
asking you where it came from.
Oh me, I got that from the local supermarket. Because the cottage, there really wasn't much around the cottage at all. In terms of shops and stuff like that, it was all in this estate that's owned by a family, and the place is absolutely huge. But there's not a great deal out with it, if unless you want to drive like 6, 7 miles to get to the
Oh,
nearest village.
wow.
So.
Okay, so when you're shooting this place is quiet then. You can do pretty much whatever you want.
Yeah, within the instructions of said location owner. But yeah, I mean, you're not going to disturb anyone, and no one's going to disturb
No.
you. So it kind of comes with its advantages and disadvantages. Being a bit remote is good for that, but also in terms of logistics and actually getting everyone out there, it's a bit of a headache. But I think the benefits probably outweigh the negatives in terms of the peace that you get just to shoot,
So let's go back. How did you find the cottage?
Usually, when we have to do something like this, we'll just go and trawl the internet, whether that's Airbnb or any of the. We tend to, if we're having to hire a residential property, we tend to go to the sort of holiday let type sites first, as opposed to anything specific for locations, because you've got a bit more scope and you can find something with a bit more character and personality. But obviously, you're then having to turn around to the people and say, look, this is a let, but we would like to do some filming and that kind of thing. And that comes with a couple of extra little hurdles. But if you can get over them, we're kind of the same as any other guest, really, leave the place as we found it kind of thing.
So, how do your guests don't stay here then, from what you're telling me? You have to bring them in every day?
Yeah, I mean, people just drove back home and didn't stay in the cottage, but we're doing a lot of back shifts, so we'd start at 3 p.m., get the tail end of the daylight, and then sort of shoot into maybe the middle of the night. But I mean, it wasn't too remote. I think I was, 45 minutes drive back home,
That's
which at
not
the
too
end of the
bad.
day, yeah, get back to your own bed and whatnot.
I understand that. It looked like you had a filter on the film at one point. Did you put a filter on?
There was I can't remember what you call it, but it's a sort of daylight filter type thing. Is it polarizer? I can't remember, but yeah, I mean sometimes when we're shooting outside, we'll have that kind of stuff. Certain films will grade a little bit more heavily than others to give them a specific look. I think we wanted to go for quite a kind of rustic look for this.
So, Tom, when you're writing this, any of this come to your mind, or you're just literally writing a script? Like, do you see the house in your head? Do you see? I mean, obviously, I understand the words and the actions are
Yeah.
yours, but I meant, do you see what he's getting at? Like, you're like, okay, I want a remote location. I want a basket. She's bringing in that. Does that come to you, or is that added Nathan just adding flourishes?
No, most of that's kind of written. So the basket and everything that was written as well. We specifically wanted to kind of set it in a remote location as well, kind of away from everything else. So, that looks better if you do find the real deal, really. So somewhere that is set so far away from everything else. I do kind of visualize a little bit when I'm writing, and because we've kind of discussed it beforehand, we're on the same page. So, you know, it doesn't, there's not massive amounts of surprise in terms of visuals by the time I see it on screen. The surprises usually come from, you know, maybe certain shot choices or the performances as well, where I think, oh, that's, you know, more than I imagined when I was writing.
So Nathan, from what I'm understanding, you have complete autonomy to do whatever you want with shooting style, obviously.
And I mean, Tom and I usually talk about sort of comparison titles or looks, or you know, we'll go off and both watch a couple of films that are quite similar we might draw inspiration from. But generally, if it's a project that we are putting together ourselves and we don't have, you know, another executive producer, for example, looking over our shoulder, you can kind of do what you want, but we always try and keep it within the realms of commercial ability, because otherwise you can't sell it if you make something so
Oh,
obscure, you know.
absolutely. So you have a jewelry box full of items at one point. Where did that come from?
Usually when I have to go and look for stuff like that, I will go on eBay or charity shops. I think most of that came from eBay. So, you know, genuine watches from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, some that are not working. I think I picked up the jewelry box off eBay as well. But anything like that, like one of the previous films, I had to get a load of like burner phones, or you know, old mobile phones, and I'll just go and buy the real deal off of eBay, because it looks authentic. You don't have to age it up or anything like that. You know, you get it and you're like, yeah, I basically went on eBay and bought a lot of crap, but that's exactly what I wanted, you know.
That's fine. Tom, when you're writing, I want to discuss a ginger actor. The man looks huge. Did you write him to be, I'd say, a beast? I mean, the guy looks like 6'6" on film. Maybe he's not. If he's not, good work, Nathan, because you fooled me. But the guy looks huge.
He was written to be kind of intimidating looking.
Oh my God.
For, you know, kind of key for the film, because it kind of puts the audience into think, you know, a certain mindset about what his character's going to be. He was written like that, and also, you know, I helped out in the casting process as well. So I kind of dug out the guy that played him, Ollie Bassi.
So you are involved in the casting process. So you're just not just a writer, you move on. So Nathan, do you and Tom usually agree on people, or have you ever had an argument about that kind of thing?
Nah, I don't think that we've ever had an argument about that kind of thing. I mean, some of it has to be based on logistics, but you know, 10 times out of 10, we'll try and go for the best person for the job, hands down. But yeah, no, Ollie was great, and he is a big guy. And I think sometimes when we, and I mean, Tom and I have done quite a few films now, so you kind of have a bank of people that you either write a specific role for, or you write the film and go, oh, such and such would fit that role. But occasionally, like in the case of Ollie, you have to look at with your network and cast someone totally new. But because Tom's written the character and knows what it's meant to be, Tom kind of takes a hand in the casting of any new roles as well. And people that we know, you know, will tend to bounce back and forth on suggestions there.
Now, your main female actor you had to have, I mean, I gotta say, she has to have a certain look to suit it. Did you guys have problems finding that, or you know this person ahead of time?
I have known Nico for a few years. We'd never worked together. I was aware of her through mutual friends and bumping into networking things. And then I'd seen a couple of her previous films as well. So it was kind of, she was cast off of the strength of that, me knowing her, and also some of her previous work. I can't remember sort of like who saw her and what, or if I suggested her, Tom, or you suggested her. I can't really remember, but
Yeah. I mean, I think you suggested her
first.
first, and I was kind of aware of her. But yeah, I think it was one of those things where we were kind of sort of aware of her and, you know, thought she'd be good in the role, but we weren't quite sure whether she would do it or not. So yeah, eventually, obviously, we approached her, she agreed, and that was re relatively easy in the end.
So when you're doing the writing process, Tom, do you have a beginning, middle, and end already? Or do you just go, I have an idea, let's see where it goes? Or how does that work?
On this one, so we had the basic premise, which was the kind of maybe the first two thirds of the film, just sort of during writing and kind of going back and forth, we kind of evolved that maybe the last act of the film, because it's quite difficult in a film confined into one place to kind of keep the energy going for 80, 90 minutes. So we wanted to think of ways we could maybe take the film into unexpected ways and make something that would stand out to audiences. So yeah, we kind of knew the basic setup and probably where it was going to end up, but it was just sort of that last act kind of evolved as I was writing and we were going back and forth.
Okay, Nathan, you have a police van at one point. Where did you find that? Is that the van that got stuck?
Yeah, it probably is the same van that got stuck. Yeah, that actually was just a hire van that we kitted out to make look a bit more like a police van. So like the benches were built for it, and then some of the fixtures were put in there because actually probably a little bit of an inconsistency with reality. But prison vans or vans for transporting prisoners tend to be a lot more confined than that. You probably couldn't have a full on scrap in the back of one of them, although I'm sure many people have tried. So yeah.
Yeah.
So was the fight scene choreographed, or you these actors knew what they were doing?
Yeah, I mean, I do a bit of fight choreography as well, and have done before on some of the other action stuff that we've done or the thriller stuff that we've done. So I think all the fights were choreographed by myself, but generally the people that we get into help do them have got some stunt background, or we'll cast actors that have got some stunt background as well, which is always an added bonus. So we'll go in and rehearse that in a rehearsal space, make sure all the moves make sense in real life, and then tweak it as necessary. But for that kind of stuff, you really want to get a bunch of people that know how to throw themselves around.
So, Tom, the little Red Riding Hood coat, was that your idea in the script, or was that just an add-on in costuming?
So there was a hooded sort of coat that was in the script. So not necessarily, I don't think I specifically thought of a sort of Red Riding Hood coat. So I'll give Nathan the credit for that one.
So, Nathan, were you lifting off the Red Riding Hood, or you just like the red to symbolize other things?
I think it was a little bit of both. Obviously, we had to keep the character hidden so that you didn't know who it was. It could have been subconsciously a little bit inspired by Don't Look Now and stuff like that. And the other thing is, I thought a black or grey raincoat would just disappear in the forest at night.
I agree.
So it makes it a bit more difficult to shoot if you've not got something that stands out.
So who tied the big knot?
I don't know what that is.
The knot. Somebody's tied up with rope.
Good question, actually. I don't think it was me. I think it was someone. I think it was one of the other crew that must have had some Boy Scout experience or something like that. Because yeah, it wasn't me, but it was one of the crew.
So, as you're filming, I mean, it seems you have a nice shot selection ahead of time. Maybe that's Tom's great writing that you just know what you're doing. I mean, I liked it. You guys got very concise and you have a nice twist. Now, when you're shooting that kind of stuff or writing that kind of stuff and you know it's the big scene, how do you do shoot that differently, think differently, or everything's always the same? Especially with writing, too, because you kind of jolt me at some point.
Do you want to go first, Tom?
Yeah, like I said before, I think we wanted to have certain twists in it, so we kind of lead the audience one way, even when they think it's going in an obvious direction, we sort of throw on an extra twist to kind of pull it another way. It is quite hard finding that moment in a script and trying to make it land. Obviously Nathan reading it the first time, we would have discussed it anyway, so it wouldn't be a surprise to him. But it's always nice when you hear the first reaction from any cast that are reading it. Because yeah, I know Nico was particularly interested in the role after kind of reading the script. So yeah, that was pleasing from my point of view that the twists kind of landed.
Oh, absolutely. Nathan?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, consistency is probably key in terms of when you're shooting something. And I think this one, it wasn't, to me anyway, it wasn't like a Sixth Sense twist where you'd built it up and then there was this complete change in direction, or almost like, just plot turns that were going off in different directions. So really for me it was just about keeping it consistent throughout. The one thing that I did do as a motif was constantly shooting through windows, A, to get the effect of the rain, and B, I guess, is a sort of motif that it's probably like an old Hitchcock trick or something like that, where the audience constantly feel like they're spying on them or looking in on a world that they're not really meant to be seeing, kind of thing. A little bit like the Peeping Tom type thing. So anytime we're looking at the characters in those shots, it's always kind of through windows, or there's always something a bit devious going on in the basement. When the cops approaching Nico at the end is all through the windows. So, and again, if you're shooting in a cottage, you've got lots of options to do that, fortunately.
Is there breadcrumbs here for me to figure out the end? I think there are a few.
Yeah,
I
I
do
mean
see
that was
little bits, and it's hard to tell because Nathan does a great job of confusing me. But I think in the third act, you should have an idea what's going on.
by then, we like to play fair as well, so I'm not a big fan of when you have like plot twists and things where it's come completely out of the blue and they've not really laid anything down, because it's almost like you're not playing the game fairly. So we did layer in a few kind of clues throughout the film, just certain things, in the way that some of the characters speak, a few like visual clues as well that suggest certain things, and kind of, we lead one way and then with another character we start leading another way, but it's just how it all comes together at the end. And so, once those twists happen, we want the audience to sort of say, be surprised, but also think, ah, so that's why, these two characters are acting this way in that moment there. So it's about laying those clues out, and everything kind of has to come together. So my script and then the way it's shot, the way it's acted, and hopefully it all came together well and wasn't sort of too out of the blue.
No, I don't. I enjoyed the film. So if that's what you're asking me, yes, I had a good time. Nathan, when you're shooting, do you have the music you use in the film in mind, or is that added? I understand it's after the post, but do you play music on the set for those scenes, or you just leave it?
I wouldn't usually play music on the set or anything like that, and all of the composing is done in post-production. But usually Tom and I have usually discussed that as well before going into it, so what type of style the music's got to have. Potentially sometimes we'll have discussed where the cues are going to come in, and then I'll take any thoughts from us and I'll usually have a meeting with the composer and say, look, this is the kind of style and tone that we want to go for. These are some of the scenes that I thought should have music and be key to that part of the film, and then here's some of the scenes I thought should have no music, to because sometimes having no music is impactful as having a really good score in there, and you've got to kind of balance it out by doing a bit of both. But then ultimately I say to the composer, look, if you disagree with that and you've got a reason for it, you're the expert here, so just let me know what you're thinking. But there's probably not really any aspect that Tom and I don't discuss at some point before we actually go to shoot.
Okay, I'm going to move on to fun questions because your first time on the show, your favorite film, please.
Mine is probably Blade Runner.
Which one?
The original, but the director's cut.
Heard that a few times, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've got an actual one favorite film. What I have started doing is putting a list of all the films that I consider like the best on my phone. So what's on there? Casablanca, Psycho, Shutter Island.
Look at this guy. Thrillers, old school.
A few Martin Scorsese films.
Because you guys are Scottish, what's your favorite food?
Well, I'm not, and Tom's from down south. But do you want to go
Oh,
first,
you're
Tom?
English?
I am.
I did not know that.
I My daughter asks me this quite a lot as well. She asks me what my favorite food is. I can never sort of answer because probably because I like too much food, but
Fair enough.
yeah, I don't really have a standout favorite, I don't think.
Nathan, do you?
Yeah, I mean, probably if it was a case of death row meal, and I'd been put in death row for one of my films or something like that, being
Well,
dreadful.
not yet. I haven't seen them all, but so far you're okay with me.
It won't be one of
Okay.
mine that I wrote, though.
It would probably be what we call a full Scottish breakfast, and you can get a full English breakfast as well. There's certain,
So there is a
differences.
difference between an English breakfast and a Scottish breakfast. I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. I didn't know there was.
Yeah, I mean, Scottish breakfast, you tend to get all those nice things like haggis and black pudding that are full of sheep's
Okay.
blood and the like.
I get it.
Yeah, so, but you do get those down there as well, Tom, don't you?
Yeah, it's not easily available, but I had some haggis about a week ago. Good
He's
stuff,
still
good
here.
stuff.
He's
Yeah.
still
So it's
alive.
my last question because I thought you're both Scottish, but you're not. So have you ever eaten a Burger King? Because I don't think it exists in Scotland anymore.
Yeah, I have. There's not that many. There's two that I know of in Glasgow. There might be more, but versus McDonald's and KFC, there aren't that many. But yeah, I have. Yeah.
Tom? Tom,
Yeah,
you
I've got a
there?
local one near me,
Oh.
so yeah, every now and again.
Okay, well, that's it, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, before I let you go, where do you f tell everybody where to find your films?
Yeah, so Death Among the Pines is currently out to rent or buy on Amazon Prime in the US, and it's coming to Tubi in a few weeks' time as well, and then it will roll out to more platforms. And then for anyone from the UK, it's coming out here later on in the year.
Excellent. Do you have a website you want to promote or anything?
I mean, you can find me on social media on Facebook and Instagram, just under Shepka Productions and Tom.
Yeah, they're just the same. So on Instagram, I'm on at Jolliffe Productions.
Okay, thank you for your time and have a great day.
Cheers, man. Thank you
Thanks
for
very
having us on.
much.